Unfiltered, the official Sunderland AFC podcast.
Hello and welcome to SAFC Unfiltered, brought to you as ever by Alpha Security. Myself and Danny are currently standing outside the Academy of Light, where we're going to head in a second and speak to Christian Speakman. But the league fixtures are complete as we embark on to the playoffs very, very soon. Danny, it's been a long, tiresome season, hasn't it? Of course, the games came thick and fast, but we've got a few days off now before we regroup and head into the playoffs.
Yeah, it was, a long season. Didn't quite go to plan. You know, we got up and amongst the automatics, didn't we? Fell short, but we've got a second chance at it now. It's a good 10 days for Lee Johnson to regroup with the lads, see who's fit, see who's get the numbers back out there and look forward to the playoffs. I think, yeah, give it a good go and hopefully we can get up.
Yeah, and we're going to come up here and speak to Christian this afternoon at the Academy of Light. He's been very busy. There's loads of things happened at the club, and he's only 5-6 months since he's been in the role. There's been a restructure up here at the Academy. There's been people being put in positions. There's new data analysts being put in place, new head of recruitment. And by all the sounds of things, he's not done yet either.
Yeah, a lot going on behind the scenes. We've already caught up with him twice on the podcast this season. And yeah, as you say there, he's coming around Christmas time. A lot of people being appointed, a lot going on, as we say, on the football pitch. Things are going okay at the minute. You say we're not far off where we were looking to be. And yeah, as I say, good end to the season. And then a lot to go on during the close season, I think.
Okay, then let's head inside and speak to Christian Speakman. Welcome back to SAFC Unfiltered. Christian Speakman, how are you doing, Christian?
Really good, thanks, guys. Great to see you again.
Yeah, you've been busy. I'm just going to run down a little list in recent weeks and including most recent days. SAFC ladies have applied to participate in the championship. The club has been awarded the North Eastern Yorkshire Community Club of the Year by the EFL. The season card campaign seems to have gone down really well, and we had really good take-up on that. We won the EFL trophy. There was, of course, the hashtag Sunderland Together campaign as well. Lewis Dickman was appointed academy manager. Leanne Cowperthwaite, head of academy operations. Stuart Harvey, head of recruitment. James Young, head of analysis and data. And to top it all off, you've got a new owner in Kirill Louis-Dreyfus. So it's been pretty quiet behind the scenes.
This has been a fairly run-of-the-mill season.
Where do you want to start then?
And we're adding the playoffs on top of it.
Yeah, well, we've got all that to come.
We can start wherever you guys want to start. It's your show.
Well, I guess let's start with here at the Academy where we are today. You've been appointing people. You've also been rearranging the furniture and moving walls as well up here. And the restructure is fairly, it's fair to say it's well underway, isn't it?
Yeah, I think certainly behind the scenes in terms of how we go about operating for all our teams and all our performance domains, yeah, we're certainly making some progress there. I appreciate for the fans it's a difficult one to sort of understand because they don't get that real insight inside, which hopefully these type of podcasts can provide. But there's probably two sides to it, or three sides to it. One is the physical infrastructure. This building is an incredible facility. And I mean, to think it was built nearly 18 years ago and it's still pretty much fit for purpose is a testament to Sir Bob and obviously all the work that went on with the guys putting this together back then. But what we need to do is we just need to adjust a little bit of the layout to accommodate all these teams that have evolved over the years since then. Sports science, performance, analysis and data. They need a home with the right equipment and space to obviously perform and hopefully for us to be as efficient and as effective as possible. So there's certainly that bit. Then you've got the people. And you've obviously just gone through a list there of some of the people that we've acquired so far for the business. We're probably about 60% through on that, I'd say. So we've still got several positions that we'll be sort of embarking on over the summer months, trying to work at it with some strategy and some prioritisation. But that obviously, as you can probably appreciate, takes a heck of a lot of time behind the scenes to pull together candidate lists, run interview processes, and then select the right type of person. And then the final piece will be the sort of culture piece, which is what is it to be and work at Sunderland for players and staff, and that's something that's ongoing. We've sort of pretty much pinned down a sort of purpose of what we want to do and why I want to do it, and together with a football philosophy, which we'll hopefully just started launching with the academy coaches 3 weeks ago. So like you said, there's been a lot. They're the three real strands to obviously our work at the minute.
When we first met as well, you were very keen to suggest that a future for Sunderland Football Club would be to look down data and analysis. James Young has been brought in to head that up. Explain to people listening to this podcast and ourselves what exactly that role entails and how good James is at his job.
How good is James at his job? Well, we're going to find that bit out over the coming months. That's what we'll definitely find out. But James had a really, really good start with us. Ultimately, we've got these different performance domains, of which analysis and data is one of them. And what we're trying to ensure is we've got a head of those domains who's responsible for all the operations and all the people that occur within that, from under eights all the way through to the first team. So he's got members of staff who work with the first team, he's got members of staff who work with the tens. So from that perspective, it's important to have that thread all the way through and for us to be as efficient as effective and also champion best practice and obviously have the variation of ideas and different experiences that people have got within a domain. And we don't want to have a silo where people are breaking off in age groups, which obviously traditionally is a sort of a youth and academy. And then within the youth department, you might have, you know, the 10s and 12s coaches over there and their people. And then that's not an efficient way of working. Doesn't drive best practice, and it certainly doesn't drive a culture of performance. So for us, with the data element specifically, what we're trying to do is make more evidence-based decisions and utilise the data. Now, that doesn't mean we're running off just picking different things off the numbers, but what we're trying to do is we're trying to use the numbers and analysing the detail around whatever the numbers are to help us evaluate whether something's good, whether something's bad. And then obviously, most importantly, moving forward, trying to help us predict and project what's going to happen. And therefore, that's aiding our decision making. And I think any modern organisation now, whether it's sporting or another, is going down that route. And we're trying to get at the front of that, from obviously being a little bit further back in the race because we've had nothing, and trying to work as quickly as we possibly can to do it.
Can I just ask, on a practical point of view, is this hardware, software technologies that you're bringing in, is this like trackers on players in training? Is it CCTV watching training games, watching games back? Put it back to me and try and explain how the data is collected.
Well, the data is collected loads of different ways. Certainly in terms of, you've got traditional event-based data, which is what are the events that occur within a game or training session. And then you can use that to be able to give you some reference points on whether we're successful or not at what we were trying to do. It has to always link back to what your objective was in the first place. So if you, for example, was to take the football philosophy and say we want to play forward, then obviously you can take that event data and you can start to look at the number of times you've played forward and then where you've played forward from. What we're really, really interested in is some of the stuff around the camera technology you can get now with the tracking data, where you can start to use these XY coordinates to start to work out where everyone's on the pitch at a given moment, start to work out what's the probability of that move being successful, what have you got to do when you receive the ball at that moment in the game, with your best chance of going to score, where can we monitor like momentum flows in games. So you'll see maybe in some of our games would be a good example whereby we have the lead, and then all of a sudden, if you actually look at the data and the evidence, there's several things happen that lead up to the opposition then scoring. Like you said, and not just relying on your eye to do that. So there's probably, hopefully, there are a couple of examples for you. And that's exactly the same within player recruitment, is what can we understand about a player that just the watching the player live or watching the player on video doesn't tell you. And obviously, you can bring all that together, you can aggregate that data, and then what you can start to do is model that data on what you want. And hopefully that's then helping you make the best possible decisions.
So that coming in then, obviously bringing Stuart Harvey into the fold, I guess, as well. Vital role for him with the head of recruitment, working alongside James with the data. But as you've mentioned there, it's what you see with your eyes as well, isn't it? Going and watching games, you've got the data to work alongside that. And for instance, if you're looking for next season, say, at a striker, bringing a striker in, what's his stats looking at that? And at the same time, is he fitting into a system that we're looking to play with next season? The gaffer's preferred formations, I guess, and everything has to tie into what looking at the player you're bringing into the club.
Yeah, well, Stuart's obviously not been with us very long, and Stuart is highly motivated to try to build a model for us, which is both using the subjective and the objective. So, you know, watching the games and understanding how the players behave on the pitch, and obviously there's lots of things that data doesn't tell you. Yeah. That you want to get an eye on it to understand body language, things like that, which obviously data is very hard to try to pick up. What's their character looking like in certain moments of the games? How do they go about, you know, how vocal are they? Where's their communication? But what we want to do, if you imagine, is we want to spread ourselves to be able to analyse and observe as many possible players as you can. Now, it stands to reason, obviously, if you go down a traditional video or live scouting route, you've got to watch a lot of games over a lot of hours. What we're trying to do is merge those two areas together, whereby we can run data which is specific to us. So we're not using a generic tool. We're going, we want this out of our right back. So we just recently, for example, pulled together our player profiles for each of our positions. Those profiles are relevant for all the age groups, built into our coaching program, provide us the opportunity then to go, right, we need this out of a right back. We can run the data. We can then go through a subjective viewpoint of getting different scouts to watch it against an assessment criteria against that profile. And then we can start to get to more of a shortlist, and we can sort, prioritise, and look at that shortlist again different. So what you can then do is you can run the shortlist through the data again, but maybe you can tweak the dials and various things on the profile to then start to really hone down on specific players. And ultimately, we're looking for the right players for the squad, but we're also looking for value. So we're looking for the players who might perform better than maybe what the eye suggests.
So, you know, when you get to that shortlist, whether it's two or three players, and again, this will come back to the question where it'll be between yourself, obviously Stuart Harvey having an input into it, and Lee Johnson, who gets to make that final decision. Do you know where I'm coming from in terms of...
the final call.
Does the data push that as well? And for instance, if you've got two strikers you're looking at, you're maybe keen on one, the gaffer's looking at another one and fancying him more, but then does the data come into play in terms of maybe the stats from previous seasons?
I know it's always a question that gets raised because there's always this sort of start point that everyone's got a different opinion.
Yeah.
I think if you think about from a top-down approach, you've got an identity that you're trying to create for Sunderland, then you've got a football philosophy layer underneath that, and then you've got a game model, and then you're looking at players to fit the game model. Now, if we all understand the identity, we all understand what the football philosophy is, and we understand what the game model is that actually delivers that, then you shouldn't be too far apart with the types of players you're looking for to fit it. So therefore, you're starting to really discuss and contemplate all the various small intricacies of that list of players. Ultimately, it has to fit a financial model, and it has to meet the needs of the squad composition. So that's the area where I'm responsible in terms of making sure that the squad composition is correct, it fits within the succession planning, and it meets the financial elements of either the budget or the long-term planning. But then it has to be a player that Lee wants to pick in the team. Otherwise, it's absolutely 0 point. So if you like, the final decision is Lee's. We're providing lists and shortlists, and then we're trying to adjust. And it might be that we really feel there's a player that we want to acquire, and we have to then adjust the financials to try to make it work by maybe compensating other areas. And that thing is just us working as an effective team. You know, we certainly had that in January with a smaller team of people, mainly myself and Lee. And now we've obviously got the opportunity and the scope to widen it out. And the different views is really important. You know, what you don't want to get in these situations is the group thing that we just convince ourselves that this player is the best player for that solution. It's important we get different views as long as we go. And we've just created a model for this transfer window that will run, a process that we'll stick to, and therefore we can evaluate back against it.
Yeah. How much do you see, obviously, we've missed out on automatics now, and now we're into the playoffs, which is extending the season another 3 weeks. Has that become a hindrance, really, in terms of looking at transfers, not knowing what league we're going to be in moving forward? Or do you still, as you mentioned previously, you've got the two lists of lads maybe looking to retain and release in the summer. Is that the same in terms of looking at targets of what you're bringing in as well, whether we do get to the Championship or remain in League One?
I mean, ultimately, you're running a process for player selections, retentions, on meeting the philosophy and what we're trying to play. Then you're dividing that into levels. Can that player do what we're asking him to do in the Championship and then League One? Obviously, there's obviously going to be a financial element to that, because potentially players who want to play in the Championship are going to require more money. I don't see it as an issue, really. I mean, any business has got to be flexible and adaptable, and we're no different. So we have to flex and adapt. We're actually quite fortunate, you know. We know what the two parameters, what the two outcomes are. You know, with other businesses that are operating in today's environment, you know, you don't know all of a sudden coronavirus, you don't know the government say we're going to do this, that, and it's completely ambiguous. For us, we know what the two outcomes are going to be, and we can plan effectively around the two outcomes. We've got a really robust player recruitment process in there. It causes some anxiety, I appreciate, because the timeline looks quite short.
But I think what you're suggesting is that there's no reason to panic because there is a plan there behind the scenes.
No, and ultimately, you know, I mean, I arrived here, I think, the 5th of December, I think it was. You know, if you'd have said, we're getting automatic promotion, obviously I'd have been delighted.
Yeah.
But from where we were, if we were going to be in the playoffs with a home tie as the second leg, which I think is really, really important, whoever you play against, I think everyone would probably have gone, that would be a fantastic outcome. And ultimately, we've got to enjoy the playoffs. Like, you know, we're in a competitive sporting environment, and, you know, we should be living for these types of moments. Plus, you've got the fans coming back to the Stadium of Light on the 22nd of May.
Something that you haven't experienced yet.
I have not experienced that yet, no. Well, I have experienced it about 10 years ago, coming as a run-of-the-mill spectator to watch a game. But I think to be there, knowing that obviously you're working for the football club in a fairly senior capacity and you're delivering for the people of Sunderland, really, really looking forward to that, as I know Lee is as well, and the players are. So for us, it's a fantastic, you know, few weeks to be involved in that high-level, high-profile games. And then, like I said, we'll execute the plan based on where we end up on the 30th.
You've kind of touched upon it there as well, Christian, but the first team's progress over the time you've been here, 6 months or so, and the implementation of the playing style of which you'd like to see. Are you happy with where we're at right now then?
I'm happy in terms of where we sit at the end of the season. I mean, you'd always want to, as being a competitor, you always want to achieve more. So it's hard to say you're satisfied. I never like to think I would be satisfied. You've obviously reeled off a whole list of things there. You know, I think there's been so many things to do. You're always going to look back from May retrospectively in a review and go, I think we could have done that better and that better. But without providing excuses, you've also got to understand the scale of the task and the scale of the project. And we're trying to deliver on multiple areas of the operations all at the same time. And they said it, within that, you know, things are going to go slower, some things are going to go faster, some things you'll be really happy with. What we've seen in the team is we've seen some trends in some of the data and some of the statistics which point towards the team being able to deliver the philosophy we're after. Have we nailed it? Well, no, of course we haven't. I mean, it's incredibly difficult to ask a coach to come in blind halfway through the season and go, right, we need to change all these things, we want to work on these things, and then we've got to win every game. Now, obviously, we appreciate that's the expectation, but at the same time, you know, we feel that we're moving in the right direction, and once we get back into a pre-season, we'll hopefully be able to move forward even quicker.
I wonder if we could focus on a couple of players in terms of development. I guess someone easily you could pull out was someone like Jack Diamond, who wasn't necessarily in the side at all before this season, but in the last few games and pretty much all season has been involved. He signed that new deal as well. Is he a great example of what you're trying to do here?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, look, we're really pleased with Jack, and we think Jack's got a really bright future at Sunderland Football Club. I mean, that's why we've obviously invested the contract that we have with him. You know, he signed a long-term contract with us. You are obviously talking about the bits that you see on the pitch where he's obviously had more minutes, but there's an awful lot of work that's been done with the coaching staff here at the academy in terms of working with him on his game and working on him improving in his game. Naturally, the squad is for a squad that's done well, has got some senior players in it that have also been performing well. And we are probably quite top heavy in terms of the number of players that we've got in the forward areas, and that was deliberate because we felt that was going to be important for us to get into this playoff spot or automatic promotion where we looked at it in December. But Jack's we're trying to engineer more minutes for him, but obviously also what we're trying to do is work with him behind the scenes on all the coaching to try to bring him up to speed with how we need him to play within our philosophy. And we're really, really pleased with Jack. You know, I think the other player, which I know from reading some of the media, is obviously Elliot Embleton's gone and done really well at Blackpool, and people see this as a huge negative. We're delighted that Elliot's gone there and played the games, because the plan for Elliot was to go and play, you know, 8+ games, you know, and we managed to get him a League One club.
And reports from Blackpool fans is he's had a massive impact in the season.
Yeah, I mean, but that's fantastic for us, because that's exactly the outcome we wanted. And there was no guarantee that if he was here, we would have played the number of minutes with the number of players we've already spoke about that play in that top end of the pitch. So, you know, that's a really, really important thing for us in terms of him coming back here for the pre-season and being involved with us next season.
I think, yeah, as you say, that's important that he's gone out to a club at the same level as well. You know, he hasn't gone to League Two, has he? Or dropped down low. He's gone and proved himself really at this level because he's had a tough time with injuries, hasn't he? Out a while with his hamstring. And as you say there, we were quite well stocked in the attacking areas of the pitch. If he's not going to get the game time, get him out and get him some game time, and he's done well there.
The easiest thing with Elliot would have been to loan him to League Two.
Yeah.
And we held out and we held out because we were desperate to get him with the right club, with the right coaching staff, and Neil and the guys at Blackpool have done excellent with him, giving him that platform, and he's gone on and performed. And what he's demonstrated is he's demonstrated the ability to play at the level we need him to play at. So we need to get him back here, have him played those minutes with greater confidence, and hopefully he can come back and ultimately need to impact our team, don't we?
Just, again, taking a step back, Christian, and looking at your position here at the academy, and it's easy looking in that the health and the performances of the under-23s has been so much better this season. You must be happy with that.
Yeah, look, it's fantastic, isn't it? We've got a football club. We've got two teams in the playoffs. So that's a wonderful achievement for them. It's obviously been well documented that group's had some tough times over the last 18 months. We feel we've got a much more organised group. Obviously, we feel that there's one or two players that have been on the fringe of the first team and played some of them games, which has been good for them. You know, you've only got to see what it means to those boys yesterday when Josh scored the free kick. I know, obviously, they went on and scored the defence straight away. But look at the celebration and what it means to those boys to actually achieve. And I think what we've got to try to ensure we've got here is, you know, a winning mentality. You know, there's a big difference between having a winning mentality across the groups and a win-at-all-costs mentality. We need a winning mentality. We need teams to be competitive. So it's fantastic for them. Really looking forward to going down. I think it's next Monday night. They're going to be playing Stoke again. Yeah. In a triple header the last couple of weeks. But really pleased for them.
Yeah, and obviously one you mentioned there, Josh Hawkes. And I know a lot of fans have seen what he's doing in the 23s and maybe are asking, is he close to getting a run out? Obviously coming to the end of the season now and into the playoffs. But was he close to coming in and getting a run out for the first team? You see the likes of Jack getting in there. Ollie Young has had one or two run-outs for the first team. Dan Neal, earlier in the season, in the Papa John's games, was getting a run-out. Where does Josh lie at the minute in terms of them? I think he's got 13 goals this season, hasn't he, for the 23s?
Yeah, Josh's performance with goals and assists in the 23s has been really, really good. He's right up there in both of those charts. And he's a player of the age now. He needs to be able to come into the first team environment. I mean, he's trained an awful lot with the first team. He's not managed to squeeze himself onto the starting 11, which, again, speaks probably more about the quality in the team than it does to say that Josh has fallen short. I think, like you said, you know, myself and Leah watching almost all the games, Josh has performed really, really well. He'll be in the first team squad for pre-season and it'll be up to him.
Because he's 22, he's not really young now, is it, in terms of a foot, no, you know, like class 17, 18 breaking in,
he's
young,
not, so he's got every player's different, aren't they? And you'll know that from coming from your playing career,
right,
where you've
yeah.
seen different players populate the first team at different times. What we've tried to do is try to structure it that he's been across with the first team quite a lot of training. He understands what the requirement is. Naturally, there's going to be a reshuffle of the squad in the summer. And pre-season provides those players the great opportunity to get involved in the games and perform. And that's the next step he needs to take.
As you say that, I think it is vital that they're training as well with the first team, isn't it? You know, 3-4 days a week they come into there. Probably the big fish with the 23s when they come over with the first team, maybe a little bit nervous, but get themselves in there, training well under the eyes of the gaffer. And then, as you mentioned, pre-season's vital for the likes of Jack Diamond, Dan Neal coming back in and hit the ground running, so to speak, isn't it, ready for next season and pushing for a start.
Yeah, no, definitely. We'd like nothing more to see them starting.
If we can, again, just take a step back and look at the bigger picture, coming to the end of the interview here with yourself, SFC ladies have applied to participate in the championship next season. I imagine you've been involved in that, Christian, and it's part of this kind of one Sunderland culture which has been brought in with not just yourself but the new owner as well, and Steve Davison and other people around the club as well. And in recent years, the ladies probably have felt a little bit outside of that bubble.
Yeah, I've got a little bit of information for what it's been like previously. I mean, there's not much obviously we can do regarding what's happened in the past. What we can do is look forward and understand what part the women's team plays within Sunderland Football Club. We've got a strategy which is based around delivering things for the community, and what we need to have is we need to have an access route for young girls within the community to play within the RTC or in different environments and then be able to get into a senior team. And it seems absolutely consistent with our strategy that we should have a women's team that performs at is playing at the highest possible level we can. There's a natural opportunity for us to be able to get this potential upward movement, so we've made the application. It's part of our five-year strategy. It's one of a number of strands that we've got sort of working in a plate spinning in a different area. But we've got these performance domains that service every team, and the women's team is no different. You know, I think in a modern football club, you'd want a first team men's team doing really well, and you'd want a first team women's team really doing really well. And all the different areas of the community can obviously support the teams that they enjoy watching and being part of. So we're really, really pleased that we've been able to get that application over the line in what was an extremely short space of time, especially when all the people putting the application together are pretty much new. So from that perspective, it's been a great team effort from everyone behind the scenes, both on the football side and the business side of Black Cat House. And hopefully, like I said, we can get the tick in the box and we can get that moving.
Good stuff, good stuff. Christian, I imagine it's going to be a busy summer regardless, but it seems that there's a plan in place there as well. And obviously, we've documented the stuff that's happened so far. I guess the message you want to send to the fans is you've been busy, but you're far from done.
Yeah, no, we've only progressed a little bit in what would be the grand plan, if you like, in terms of the blueprint. I appreciate we live in an era whereby everybody wants everything instantaneously. But I also think that having spoken to a lot of people who are Sunderland fans in the community, they understand the size of the task, they understand how we're trying to go about it. It's a long-term project, we're hoping to deliver in the long-term, but also be able to deliver short-term returns at certain points in time. And ultimately, you know, we're trying to deliver for those people. So hopefully they can stick with us. We'll try to articulate our message as much as we can, as frequently as can. And we're always open to taking questions and feedback. And like I said, really looking forward to the summer and the start of next season.
So that was Christian Speakman here at the Academy of Lightning. Myself and Danny have just came back outside, and what's a lovely day at the Academy. It just reminds you of the facilities here, of which you were obviously part of for a little while as well. They really are second to none, aren't they?
Yeah, they are, and Christian spoke about it there. Obviously, it's coming about 18 years or so since it was built. It does need a little upgrade here and there, as he's mentioned, they're looking at doing. And as you say, yeah, it's a fantastic facility. Everything you needed, you know, more than what you need really for a footballer coming in day to day. See some of these young boys, perhaps don't know they're born, come into this every day, but no, it is. It's a good place to come and work every day.
What do you think about the plan he was speaking of? They seems quite calm about things, and I think that was the message he was trying to get across, that there is a long-term plan here at the football club, no matter what happens in the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly that. I think, yeah, obviously we want to go up this season. If we don't, it's not going to be the end of the world. We've got to regroup and go again in the summer. You know, talking about contracts with players out of contract, potential transfer targets to come in, so there's a lot of work to go on. You know, with being in the playoffs now, that's extended that for another 3 weeks. Whether that affects the targets they'll be looking at, we'll have to see. But no, I think as he's mentioned, there's a lot going on behind the scenes, and he seems to be in control of things.
Yes, let's hope so anyway. I imagine we're going to be up here in the next few days as well. If you aren't subscribed already to SAFC Unfiltered, brought to you by Alpha Security, then I suggest you do subscribe, because I do believe we're going to speak to the manager, the first team coach, Lee Johnson, in the next coming days and weeks before we embark on those playoff games. I think that's it for today, though. Danny, thanks for your company as ever.
Thanks, Frankie.